everybody this evening. I'd like to call to order the joint work session and council meeting with the Board of Commissioners and the City of Yahats Council. I want to briefly make a couple of comments. You have in front of you more than a few agendas that you picked up as you came in, and I'm making a change in the agenda, which is under City Council Meeting. And most of the council members already know what I mean by this agenda, at least in part. On our agenda copy, you will see a section 2 for reports and a section 4 for other business. I'm asking that both of those be postponed until the next month's meeting. We'll do a two-month report next in April. On the top, announcements. Correspondence, proclamations, public comment. We have no correspondence and proclamations. Under announcements and public comment, I would invite you to make those not there on the agenda, but under section 3J, which is the public comment. And if you feel that your comment is going longer than you feel appropriate for the commissioners being here for this meeting, after the Commissioner Hunt ends the commissioner's part of this meeting, I'm asking the city council members to stay on just a little bit more to hear any further public comment that citizens would like to tell us, so they would not have to wait for a month. Yes.
Point of correction or information.
Yeah.
I believe, Commissioner Hunt, you have your meeting after. We adjourned the joint meeting, right?
We have our Board of Commissioners meeting.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Mayor wasn't new and wasn't aware of that.
Yeah. Thank you. So I would ask you to make a prudential judgment. If you feel we need to hear what you want to say and make it prudentially during item 3J, the commissioners might also be interested in it. If not, trust us that we will make ourselves available to you for what that comment was.
And so
that,
could I ask a question?
Yes.
But actually, separate questions. This is way, way away from what has been always done in all the cities. These are not general meetings for the council. They're a discussion between the commissioners and the city council.
Okay.
And it's meant to not be a public hearing or public comment. It's a discussion between us.
Right.
And that's been the tradition ever since we've been here. So
I didn't know where the public comment came from.
So it's that's one of them. The thing is we've always tried to end at 6 o'clock. So if you have a meeting at 7 o'clock.
You're in daylight. You're not on daylight.
Yeah, I'm still on daylight. But we tried to make it so we could get out of here and you could get on with your meetings or whatever, however you want to do it.
That's good.
We'll do so. That's been my experience since I'm the oldest person of the commission that's here.
And Commissioner Hunt said that it was his practice, your practice, that we introduce ourselves, so I'll give it over to you.
Okay, well, thank you, Mayor. And just for clarification, again, we've got two different agendas. For the most part, the agenda on the city council meeting paper is similar to the agenda items on the Lincoln County one, but there is a little bit of a difference in order, so I would encourage the audience to look at the Lincoln County agenda, the joint work session with the city of Yahats City Council, because that's the order that we'll be going in. It covers the same items, it's just in a different sequence, and we changed the order to accommodate some of the staff from the county that are here, so that they're able to make their presentations and then move along. So is everybody clear on that? Clear as mud? Okay. So with that, again, thank you, Mayor, and it's a pleasure to be here. And as Commissioner Thompson indicated, these work sessions are scheduled with each of the city councils throughout the county in an effort to promote
the
and the tribe. Thank you for clarifying that. So there are actually 8 joint work sessions that we conduct annually in the evening, and it's an effort to promote communication and work together on issues that are of interest to all of us. So with that information, let's start with introductions and start on my right with the ladies first.
Yeah, the only one I noticed. Barbara Fry, I'm on the Yahats City Council.
Harold Stanley is the mayor.
Terry Thompson, the oldest commissioner.
Doug Hunt, commissioner.
Bill Hall, commissioner.
Greg Scott, city council.
Max Lane, city council.
Shannon Beaucaire, city manager. Helen Anderson, unit taker.
All right. Again, welcome all, and we'll start out with the first item on both agendas, which is the marijuana tax revenue. I believe this was an item that the commissioners suggested, and we have a couple of people in the audience to present some information. Jess and Rebecca?
I know I'm not on the agenda, but I'm going to introduce them.
Oh, you're okay.
My name is Wayne Belmont, and I'm County Council. And this is something that we're actually presenting on to all the cities across Lincoln County. I don't think that's going to sit in one state.
I can stand also.
No. We're going to need the microphone, I believe.
Grab that mic, Wayne.
Yep.
There you go.
Again, for the record, I'm Wayne Belmont. And this is a presentation we've been making at all of our joint meetings, or specifically at city council meetings, because we're trying to look at a pilot project we want to propose to you that deals with some of the tax monies that communities are receiving across Lincoln County as a result of the legalization of marijuana. And specifically, this is a what we're looking at doing is dealing with some education on substance abuse and really focusing on youth, not just youth, but that's part of the focus of what we're doing here. And what we wanted to do is the commissioners had a couple of lengthy discussions about what to do with the tax revenue we're receiving. A number of communities across the state of Oregon, I think it was over 100, implemented local taxes on retail sale of marijuana. This is, in just so people understand, this has nothing to do with medical marijuana. It's only recreational marijuana. And in each one of those cases in Lincoln County, the communities that did that, they all actually provided that the money comes to them without any strings attached. They don't have to use it for any specific purpose. It can be for your general funds or whatever you choose. So we had some discussion about, you know, what are we going to do with that money, and had some suggestions made by the members of the public and our own Health and Human Services Department. And what we thought we'd want to do next year is do a pilot project that does some education. They're going to explain the project. If this is something that the city is interested in participating in with the other communities in Lincoln County, then I'm going to follow that up with some discussions with your city manager in terms of what we're looking at in terms of funding for this and how we might use this project in the next year as a pilot. So I'll stop. You guys go.
All right.
Hello, everyone. So I'm Rebecca Austin from Lincoln County Public Health and the Health and Human Services Department. And this is Jess Palma, and she is one of our health educators in public health. And we just want to present to you an idea that we had. We're really trying to build our prevention services across the county. And one of the ideas we had, since we got some startling information from a survey that we take with kids in school, is that try to prevent especially our youth from using marijuana at too young of an age. So I'm going to turn it over to Jess Palma, who is one of our health educators and works in this area across the county.
So, welcome, Jess.
Thank you again for having us. We appreciate having a moment just to share some data with you and just bring up some concerns that we have. On the handout that Rebecca handed out just a moment ago, you'll see our first data point, you know, and this is a survey that's given to all youth throughout the state, and then these points are all taken from Lincoln County youth. So it's real time and accurate, you know, as of just last year. But that very first point, you know, you see that 50% of our 11th graders have used marijuana. Now, that, of course, is really alarming, you know, compared just to about 12% of our 8th graders have been using marijuana. And what we know is when we compare marijuana to other substances, we see a slight increase when people or when our youth move from 8th grade to 11th grade. We see a little bit of an increase with things like tobacco use. But with marijuana, it more than doubles, you know, that use. And then we're also knowing that about 1 in 5 of our 11th graders are using marijuana monthly. And that's that little stat right on the left-hand side. Since marijuana has been legalized, we've seen the perception of harm go down. And what that means is if you have a really low perception of harm, the more likely someone is to use a substance, right? because you're thinking, oh, it's not very harmful. There aren't many risks involved. So one of the things that we really want to do is we want to increase that knowledge around marijuana use, especially when you're a youth. You know, it's important. And we have different laws around tobacco and alcohol, specifically around youth, because the brain is still developing until about age 25 or 26. You know, and we know that introducing any substance to a developing body can have some negative consequences and can affect how that person, you know, continues to grow and develop and everything like that. You know, we have a lot of different ideas, and one of the really unique opportunities that we have with this funding is to really tailor it to Lincoln County. You know, every community is very different, and I think the coast is no exception. You know, we're this beautiful, thriving community, but we have different struggles and different demographics and a different population than places, you know, like Portland or Salem. So one of the things that we can do is really tailor our efforts to be specific and to meet our population's needs. And some of the things that we've brainstormed together, you know, and we would be willing to work with the city is to find out exactly what is best for, you know, our youth and just our community in each area is having a marijuana education and prevention program. You know, and that could be tailored really specifically to an age population. So working with youth, you know, whether that's inside of school or outside of school. But we could also expand that. We could be working with pregnant or breastfeeding moms. You know, we know that THC is passed to the baby through breast milk. We could also, you know, target our or work with specifically our Spanish-speaking populations, you know, or our parents. Give them some tools. You know, how do I start this conversation? You know, maybe, oh, I have, you know, conflicting views on using marijuana, but I want to communicate to my youth why it's important for them not to use. You know, so giving them tools on how to address these issues and just what they can do so they're better equipped. You know, other places have had marijuana safety town hall meetings where community members, you know, or teachers or parents or whoever is interested can come and speak with a health education specialist, ask questions, get their own resources, you know, open up that dialogue, because some of this, you know, are things that we haven't had to address before. It hasn't been legal in the U.S. in a very, very long time. We also have, you know, some policy change that we can be working on, and that can be, you know, specific to your city or you know, very specific to Lincoln County. We're very fortunate here in Lincoln County that we have some very active coalitions and we have some really active youth. So there's been this idea that we can have a media campaign that's really led and driven by our youth, you know, and it has their buy-in. And when it's coming from peer to peer, you know, we know that that's another strategy that can be really effective. And then we're also hoping, you know, that one of the things we can accomplish is getting a prevention, just a substance abuse prevention curriculum in the schools. You know, a lot of time our youth aren't hearing, you know, what the risks are of different substances or different activities, and just getting some sort of formal curriculum that can help better equip them for these decisions, not just while they're growing up, but for the rest of their life, and so they have a better understanding of how this can affect them in their future.
Questions? Comments?
So it's an interesting comments and the reasons to do it, but the subject here is about the tax, how we're going to deal with it. So give us the answer. What do you want to see done?
Well, we're hoping to sort of initiate a pilot project, and the county would put a certain percentage of money into the pot, and we're hoping that all the cities would do a similar, you know, put their money into the pot, and then we can start doing some of the work that we, because we don't get funded otherwise for marijuana prevention from the state. So we're just trying to urge all of our city jurisdictions to join the effort to prevent marijuana use, especially among our youth, you know, before they're age 21. So that's kind of what we're hoping for, and I believe Wayne is going to be drawing up a proposal that he will be sending out to all the cities. We're going around and talking to all the cities. I think we still have Lincoln City and Toledo to do yet, to try to just tell people this is what we're thinking. And this is kind of a new idea. I mean, we've really, the cities, as far as I know, have never really invested in any prevention work for improving the health of our community. And so we're just trying to test the waters right now and see if that's a viable option for you. If you don't have that resource already earmarked, that you might want to consider earmarking it for prevention, for marijuana.
I've spent quite a few years on the county's Addiction Prevention and Recovery Committee. It seems to me when you have a program, and I support the idea of a program, where all sorts of wise people sit around and all agree that this is a terrible thing that people should do, the level of credibility drops among those who are listening. The one thing I've always wondered about, I know a little about this, when you say that the use of marijuana causes damage to the brains of young people until they reach 25, are there any metrics for what you're talking about?
So there have been some studies that show, and of course everyone's body reacts differently, right? I need to say that, right? We all react to everything differently, but there have been studies that have shown that the earlier someone uses any substance, the more likely they are to become addicted to it. And specifically with marijuana, if someone starts using marijuana before the age of 18, there's a 1 in 6 chance that they will themselves become addicted to marijuana. Aside from that, there have been studies that have shown, you know, that long-term and short-term memory are affected, the ability to focus, and things like that.
Just one brief comment.
Go ahead.
Okay. But I understand. I didn't think we were talking about addiction at all, by the way, at this meeting. You used the word addiction. That's another whole issue. But I've heard that the average person loses 8 to 9 points in their IQ, and I've often wondered myself, well, that might have been too much to lose. So I just don't know if these scary metrics are, they better be pretty scary for us to stand by and say, we are sure you shouldn't do that. That's all, my only comment.
Go ahead, Jess, then Commissioner Thompson, and Counselor.
And we know, too, you know, in the past we have seen these really big scare tactics campaigns. And as far as best practice goes, right, and that means there's been research that shows that this is the best way to educate, or the best program, which is what public health relies on, reliable programs. We know that scare tactics work in the short term, but they're not effective in the long term. And so, you know, we don't want to have this big, oh gosh, everything is bad. We don't want a program that relies on scare tactics, but just education around the issue and what are some of the risks.
So, Rebecca, I'm the one that in the meeting originally said, okay, I'm interested, but only if the cities and other entities participate with us.
Right.
So how much does the cities, are they willing? We can talk forever about the pros and cons, but part of what we want to do in a conversation is say what works for the cities and what works for us if we're going to go this way.
Right. So have we got a percentage, Wayne? Is that what we're
going to
do?
No. And in fact, that was kind of what... what we're really doing right now is first getting a buy-in. Do you want to participate at all? If you want to participate, then we can start talking about what the pilot project would be and how we would fund it between the cities and the counties. So far, we've gotten positive feedback from the city of Newport. I wasn't at the meeting in Walport. I think we got positive feedback from Walport. So if we can get everybody to say initially they're willing to participate in the project, then we'll work out the specific dollars and cents and how that'll work.
Go ahead. I want to thank you for being here. I think it's a great idea at the beginning of the legalization of marijuana. It's the time to start.
Right,
not
exactly.
10 years from now.
Right.
And there is a lot of data about developing brains, the impact of addictive things, but other drugs too. I mean, it's a pretty well-documented fact. So my question is, being that Gerald and I are both on the Lincoln Community Health Center, board. Have you all started talking about the school-based health clinics, what their role in this would be?
We haven't, because we haven't really developed a program yet. So we're
just... I think that would be really important.
Yeah, oh, definitely. They will play a role, I'm sure.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, so I guess what you're kind of suggesting is that the cities who have marijuana tax dollars, that they might consider designating a chunk of that to prevention, you know, like the cigarette,
right.
The cigarette.
Exactly. And we ourselves, if we don't think that marijuana is going to become a big, big industry, it is. It is going to be as big as tobacco, probably. So, and we know what happened when we weren't ready to respond to the tobacco. You know, a lot of people died at a very young age because
of it. This is what public health is all about.
That's right.
You know, teaching and prevention. So
maybe I can provide, a little bit of background, as I remember. When this issue of the revenue tax first came before the Board of Commissioners, there was a lot of discussion about, A, we don't know what period of time the tax was collected. B, the first amount that the county got was over $100,000. The second amount was about $40,000. And so the question was, how do you develop a program when you've got volatile funding and you don't even know what levels you can expect into the future? And out of that discussion, Commissioner Thompson came up with the idea, well, what about trying to pool some of the resources that the cities have as a result of the marijuana tax and see if we can't work collectively to develop a program, have a stronger voice, and try to be more effective in educating and addressing the issue. So I think that's where we're at. And
Let me make a comment. The cities get way more money than the county does in this particular case. Far more revenue goes to the cities. So if the county wants to point me up, that's where we need buy-in. But we also need to have, in the very near future, a real discussion about what's pony up mean. It's easy to throw a few dollars in and have the county pay most of it, or we can work at it realistically and try to make something that works for both of us. And so that's the real challenge here. I think most people agree that it's a really good program to have. But now, I guess what I want to hear is, are you willing to support it? And then we'll work out the details of what's the time frame. Because if you wait too long, anything in politics gets stale. You either move forward and do something or die.
Go to Greg first. And
so to the best of my knowledge, we've yet to see our first dollar. So I think talking to us about the marijuana tax, I think we can talk about it at a conceptual level, but I don't know that we've got anything to put in the pot. My feeling was awareness about the need and about the concept. I got that. I think we need to have a discussion amongst ourselves. I'd like to move to the next agenda item.
Okay. Just a point of information. I thought the state changed the law and all cities get the money, not just the cities with stores.
Have we received any?
We've received $2,700.
Okay, I stand corrected.
I didn't realize he's got any.
Well, again, if I may, I sense that there's at least a consensus to have a dialogue that would involve Councillor Belmont as we try to put together some kind of program. Last comment I'll make is I think there are some questions about research, but we also need to realize that really any type of comprehensive research has been prohibited under federal law. So we've got some data, I think, that identifies the issue, but probably a lot more data coming. All right, we'll move on to the next agenda item. That would be the future of the health clinics in Yahats. Is that Rebecca or Councillor Belmont?
And I'm sorry, but that's why we moved this around. It's because Rebecca was here for this too. She and I have been actually meeting with a number of groups across the county to talk about some things that are happening with the Health and Human Services Department as a result of some change in leadership, number one. Rebecca is the new interim leader. And then also there was a consultant who was hired that provided some recommendations of things that we might want to look at. So we've been talking about what that means for the future of health services in Lincoln County. And in terms of the Yahats Clinic itself, let me focus on that right now. I think there was some preliminary discussions about the location and bringing some services down here. Those are not going away. I mean, in terms of the discussions, we still understand that there's a need for services down here. We want to discuss them. We're, though, moving back a little bit. We're consolidating and working on some facilities issues around the services countywide that really are our primary focus right now. And we need to take care of those issues, including the idea of a single center for services for that consolidates our behavioral health services, our primary care health services, our public health services, all those things. We had discussed a single building, and that concept is still under consideration, but we have a lot of work to do around that, especially dealing with some of the issues around the scope of services that are going to be provided, the size of the facility we're going to do, how we're going to finance that. And then we have a number of other issues we're dealing with some of our current facilities. So those are our primary focus right now. And we really can't be looking out for expansion at this point. Not that we're not going to do that in the future, but I think that the best thing to do would be to say that the facilities in Yaha are on hold right now.
I'm not sure that the SORN report understood the reality of health care in Lincoln County. The clinics that serve the public are federally funded clinics. Mm-hmm. And Yaha has been identified as a federally, by the feds, as a medically poorly served area. Mm-hmm. So, you know, part of the planning, and this was more than a preliminary discussion, it's been going on for almost 4 years, and the recognition that we really do need health care down here.
Sure.
And so, you know, some of the planning that has to happen revolves around the HRSA grants, and there's grants only come every so often. And the main funding, as you know, are for the clinics, come from those HRSA grants.
And it's a significant part.
A very significant part.
Yeah.
So while we have a shared service agreement, the majority of the money and so forth comes from those HRSA grants. So I guess I would ask you to keep that in mind. It's not totally funded by the county by a long shot.
Sure.
And healthcare is critical down here. I mean, we have a lot of people who work in minimum wage jobs, and we have a lot of kids in our kids program who really need health care, let alone the elderly people who driving 25 miles away is really a burden. So I will keep up my concern. I know it's on the list for the health council. It's up one of their priority lists. So we'll keep moving ahead and nudge you along too, I guess, is what it sounds like.
So we expect that.
Just a very short comment with Councillor Fry. I joined the FQHC council in 2006, and though we've never found the document, I was told at that time that the original plan included a third service area in Ballpark Yaha's, just to say that in support of what Councillor Fry said.
Okay.
Question. We did a memorandum of agreement earlier, and I'm asking, is it null and void now?
I'm not familiar. Are you familiar with the memorandum?
It was voted on by our council.
We're not saying we're not going to do this. It's going to be more of a question of timing.
Wondering the status.
Right, and I think this year we're really trying to focus on some strategic planning for health and human services, and so it's not like we're not going to even talk about it because that will probably be part of the strategic plan, I suspect.
Yeah.
So, yes, we aren't going to forget about providing services for the office.
Okay. Any other questions on that? More to come? All right. Welcome, James. Next item on our agenda would be affordable housing, and this was one I believe that the county put on. And is that the Commissioner Hall or Council Belmont or Otto? Somebody?
Yes, I can. Well, let me give you the look. There's been a lot of efforts around housing issues, and affordable housing is really a component of many things. We're talking about here called affordable housing, workforce housing, homelessness. There's just a gamut of issues that have been the communities across Lincoln County are trying to address, including the county. I guess the best thing for me to report right now is that some efforts have been done in different areas. The county participated in an effort with the city of Newport around some taxation issues for housing. We've had discussions with the city of Lincoln City as they're trying to address a number of these issues, and they're doing some things. It's going to culminate right now in where it's going to be another summit. And you may recall about 18 months ago, we gathered elected and appointed officials from across the county to talk about how we're all trying to address this issue, both on a local basis and on a more countywide basis. And that was held in the city of Newport. And we feel it's time to do that meeting again, to kind of talk about the things that have been accomplished, to share successes, to talk about some of the continued challenges we have. And a date has been set for that, and I'm going to have to look at my calendar to remember the specific date, because we just decided this the other day. And maybe Shannon, you can help me. You remember
April 12th,
thank you. April 12th at 3 o'clock, I think, in the afternoon. And there will be formal invitations coming out from the city of Newport, who's going to, again, host this particular event, in which we can talk about this issue in more detail and strategize for what the next steps might be. So that was, I think, why we wanted this on here, was to talk about the fact that that's coming up again.
City of Portland has recently implemented some new regulations around the concept of tiny housing. Mm-hmm. And there's considerable interest in this concept in Yahats because we are essentially landlocked. I say landlocked because we really have nowhere to expand. So our interest is in using the land area we have to more efficient, to a greater level of efficiency. And to the extent that we can afford to provide workforce housing or low-income housing to our general population, that looks attractive. It's my understanding, and I may be wrong, but that the building department in the county has been somewhat resistant to the concept of changes in their regulations to allow tiny housing. So I guess my question is, is anybody at the county familiar with what the city of Portland has done in terms of enacting legislation and guide rules to support this concept? And if so, is there any interest in moving that forward?
I could say that this is a statewide issue. And it actually, the reason why you're hearing about the building department is the building codes division looked at this issue statewide, and they basically punted it. They, you know, this is something that, you know, on one hand, we have uniform regulations in the building code that are there to preserve fire, life, safety, aspects of your building. You want to do that. The state was actually directed to look at tiny houses and to look at some of those particular issues, and they honestly punted. They said what they adopted was said, you as a local jurisdiction have to make up your own rules. If you don't want to follow the building code, you don't want to follow the fire code, you don't want to do any of those things, you can make up your own regulations for doing those. That's a scary proposition.
So excuse me, can you clarify what some of these issues are?
Yeah, well, the issues are, right now the building code allows you to build. You can build a structure on the uniform building code right now down to about 400 square feet.
there isn't a, Arnold Hughes in the planning director for the county. There isn't an actual, how tiny is tiny or how tiny can't it be or something. It's really, you've got to have a toilet, a few things. And I would point out, to prepare for tonight, we made sure we had a fresh conversation with our building inspector. We also spoke with Larry Lewis in advance. And I understand one of the last times we met, there was an individual who came to this joint meeting who complained, apparently quite vocally, that the county was not open for business on tiny houses. Well, that gentleman has since built a tiny house in Lincoln County, according to the codes. And that was just like, I don't know why it was so, just every, you need a building code for safety for people. Now, I understand also, Wayne, that this was shared with me by by Aliens, our building inspector, that House Bill 2737 during the 2017 session actually provided a little bit of regulatory relief for so-called tiny houses in terms of staircases and ceiling that you would normally not have in another house. So that's being addressed. But I think that Lincoln County is open for business on tiny houses, but please give us a set of plans that we can look at to make sure that we're carrying out our responsibilities under the building codes for safety. I don't know that an answer is to put people in unsafe housing, as bad as the problem is. But the problem is only getting worse. I just spoke to a realtor the other day who commented that we're already back at a point where the realtors are scrambling to even have listings. And so the acute housing shortage is only getting more acute. And I don't know if this community, and I've said this at one or two joint meetings, that the real answer to affordable housing is going to have to happen within the cities, not within the county. And for communities that have a different sort of arrangement in terms of land and options, I've said this in the past, that got to start thinking about $5.5 million or $1 million or $2 million and getting some urban services to some places that can be the RV parks of the future or the tiny home parks of the future, because the scale of the problem is so enormous and getting worse that RVs are all over Lincoln County. The code violations are happening all over the state. This is a real problem. And Commissioner Hall, I applaud your leadership on this, but you know, this is a mammoth problem. There is no simple solution. It's going to take a whole range of things. Hopefully, all of them will be plausible. And hopefully, we can pool our resources on this and start identifying. And it's a tough call for people in our coastal cities to identify places that we can run urban services out to, despite community reactions to having low-income housing. It's not. There are no simple solutions, but we are working on a variety of fronts to participate.
If I may, before Commissioner Thompson, I think it's important to clarify that Director Husing's comments about we're looking to the cities is not saying that we don't want to get involved or that you guys deal with it. It's really, I think, a reflection of planning philosophy. The idea is that we want housing to be close to services. And you also have urban growth boundaries, and again, the design of the city limits and the urban growth boundary is to be able to provide the public works services to those businesses and to be within the urban growth boundary. So, again, that is a philosophy of planning that's reflected in our land use laws. So we're certainly willing to work with the cities, but it makes sense for those developments as they were developed to take place within the cities where they're close to the services and within the urban growth boundary.
Thank you, okay, Mr. Chairman. That was an important point that I didn't make.
I'm going to go to Commissioner Thompson, and we'll go to Councilor Greg, Max, and then Bill.
So, Commissioner. First of all, inflation's started to increase. It's going to keep increasing. Lumber prices went from $320,000 to almost $500,000. Or $500 a thousand now. You've got these costs. Affordable housing, what is it? Is the question. Watch what you were able to build 10 years ago in the poorer times of the economy, and what you're going to be able to build even 2 years from now is going to be tiny for the same amount of money. The question is that how you build out of it? Does it take assistance from the federal government? Does it take assistance from someplace else? And then you're sitting here in a tourist community that's desirable, you may have a lot of problems. But as more and more people become more affluent, they're going to come down and raise your property values, so the people that are here are going to have a tougher time to build housing. It's a tough, tough situation. It can't be solved by planning alone.
Can I, Commissioner, make just a quick comment? But actually, in Portland, the issue is not tiny housing anymore. It's ADUs, what they call ADUs. Accessory dwelling units. And where it is you've got in certain size lots, if you've got a primary residence, they're allowing you to build that accessory dwelling. And of course, they're facing the consequences of doing that. It's what happens is people build an ADU, they move into the ADU, and then they rent out as either a vacation rental dwelling, an Airbnb, or whatever, you know, the main unit in there. So is that really solving any of the issues of housing? And they're grappling with those. Everybody across the state is grappling with that. But that's actually rather than tiny houses, it's these accessory dwelling units, which is the hot topic of discussion right now.
And there was, and I know you recognize some other counselors, but to amplify this and extend the point briefly, the legislature just in the short session passed an ADU, and I haven't even had a chance to speak to the city either. Right? All right, I think yesterday in my inbox, as a planning director, came a set of guidance from the Department of Land Conservation and Development, because what the legislature did was. And I haven't had a chance to read the bill and read the guidance and talk to you about it, but I think we're going to have to amend our code here, because within that in-betweener area of the urban growth boundary, I think we're going to either be mandated to allow for ADUs. So that's outside the city limits, but right. But there's an urban growth boundary that's kind of a no man's land. To be still in the county, but someday is going to get urbanized. Well, within that in-betweener area, and we'll get you a map showing where these UGB areas are, I think it's going to be, in effect, the land use system is going to be shoved into, you get to have that second ADU. I understand some communities, as they rapidly put into place the ordinances necessary to make this happen. So we're going to be, having to do this very quickly ourselves because we have urban growth boundary areas. Some communities, I understand, Wayne, are putting in provisos that you can't, that the rental can't be a vacation rental, and they're trying to wrestle with ordinance language that gets after the problem that you just pointed out, that these things are really not turning into affordable, they're turning into Airbnbs and revenue streams for people, which I'm not being critical of, but they're not affordable housing. And I think jurisdictions are trying to find a way to tailor those ordinances to steer them more into a not a vacation rental situation.
Just a point of clarification. In the city of Yahat, the urban growth boundary is the city limits.
Yeah.
So that puts us in something of a unique category. Second item is we don't have a building department, so we are intimately tied to the county in this respect. However, I will say I'm taking away a bit of positive news here. What I'm hearing is if a resident approaches us and has it to me and asks a question about this, and I can tell him, if you've got a valid set of plans, the county will definitely consider it.
It's a pretty small house.
Not consider it. We will approve it. Yeah. It's a valid set of plans. It meets building codes and meets this. Yeah.
So that's a yes. valuable yeah. piece of information
yeah.
that we can put on the street to help inform our residents. Because I think up to the moment, that in my head, that didn't exist. So I want to thank you very much for that clarification.
Thank you.
Thanks. That was the information I was looking for. I have two different people live just outside the city limits that are wanting to build tiny houses.
I was
wanting
right
information
out, yeah.
where to advise them to go and if you were receptive. So I hear it.
Right, get a set of plans. As long as the area outside the city yeah. is zoned for a residential. So you got to have a residential house site. We're not throwing open the farms and the fields and the timberlands to these things.
Understand.
If you've got a dwelling right, and if you can get water and septic like any other person
sure.
who would build a house, and you want to do a tiny house there, sure, give us a set of plans so we can all make sure it's safe and it meets state law. And it's not even going to be discretionary. If your plans meet the code, we're not going to sit there and say, gee, do we think it's a good idea? No, you get you've met the code, you're in. Okay.
Commissioner Holland, did you have comments?
Yes. Thank you, Chair Hunt. Just one other thing to mention. I'm not sure if this would be an option for Yahats at some point or not, but the other cities, I have been working the last few years with Oregon Housing Alliance, a broad statewide coalition on a lot of housing-related legislation. And one thing we did manage to pass a couple of years ago, and then I served on the rulemaking committee that advised LCDC on implementation. As the council knows, but maybe for the benefit of folks in the audience, expanding an urban growth boundary is quite a challenging process in Oregon. But what was passed was a pilot program that initially will allow two cities in the pilot project to have an expedited urban growth expansion, boundary expansion process, as long as it's exclusively for housing. And the legislature did make a commitment when they passed that to come back, look at the results, I believe, next year, the 2019 session, and at least consider expanding it statewide.
We're in the loop for the rural pilot.
Okay, so you might be one of the
continued meetings.
Late.
Okay,
we're
yeah.
in.
Yeah,
I know it's taking longer, so I'm glad to know Hans is in the mix for that.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think to me the message is, regardless of the size, as long as you have a building plan and you meet the zoning
and the codes,
we're open for business.
Yes.
Okay.
Good.
All right. Very good. Now, if I may take the liberty, I think we kind of covered D, E, and F.
Yep.
And we got about 12 minutes left. So if we're all in agreement, I'll move on to the pollinator plant project. Mayor.
Okay, so just a little brief update that some may not know. The city of Yahats, the city of Walpart, and the city of Newport all signed on a memorandum of agreement with the county commissioners. In an agreement then with ODOT to plant pollinator plants all the way from the bridge, as you know, down to the county line. My concern, and concern's too strong a word, I'm looking for whatever is an appropriate public statement from the Board of Commissioners that this is actually happening. There's a particular question, and that is we have, when the transformation of our highway took place here, we had a whole bunch of flower beds. We didn't know. Some may have expected them, some may not have, but they're on the highway. They don't belong to us. They belong to ODOT. I'm just asking for the county in some way to make it clear to the public, who so people would have interest, that the county is really actively pursuing this contract with ODOT, and maybe a timetable would be helpful.
Mr. Chair, may I? I have been representing the county. I know Mr. Kenyon has been to several meetings with ODOT where we've had discussions about this, and we've had, Forest Service, State Parks, of course, ODOT, and the community partners, Concerned Citizens for Clean Air, and many others I'm probably forgetting. But just last week, a long, long time after it was promised to us by ODOT, ODOT sent to us for review a proposed intergovernmental agreement that would set the boundaries of what the pollinator corridor would look like. I know Commissioner Thompson and Commissioner Hunt have not seen the document yet. I gave it to Mr. Belmont, and he has delegated it to Jerry Herbert, our deputy county councils, to review it. I know I just had a brief, and I mean like 1 minute briefing from Jerry yesterday, that he had talked to folks at ODOT, and at least on initial review, he was thinking it looked good, but we'll need to, and I've got a meeting set up with Mr. Kenyon, I believe next week or sometime in the near future for us to discuss it. So, it literally just landed in our laps. So, and again, it's got to be shared with the other commissioners. So hopefully a statement like that can be in the offing if it passes muster from the county's viewpoint, but it's just too fresh for me to be sure able to give you a firm timeline, but I think, I hope the message can at least be that now that we have a document to review, that discussion is moving forward. The county has, I think, advocated and supported for the no spray corridor that had existed for more than a decade, which in a way set the stage for this for the creation of this pollinator corridor project. And, within our resources, I think, we will continue to be supportive of it as we can.
You're bringing us all sorts of good news tonight.
Yes.
This is wonderful. Thank you very much.
Yes, I think there was a bit of delay at ODOT because of the change in the regional manager and, how things sometimes grind slowly through legal processes, but as I say, it finally arrived last week, so the ball is moving.
So, more good news there.
Yeah.
All right. Move on to the next agenda item.
I'll take that one.
Okay.
I thought to send it just before it came down, and you want to just keep hearing good news, or you want to?
I'd like some good news on this one.
We're on transportation.
The good news was that the call at 5 o'clock from Lane County was they were going out for an RFP for it.
This is the 2 years, folks.
It's 2 years, and we're finally going to, sound like Lane County is going to get into it, so we get the transportation system between here and Florence. That's the plan, at least. And it should go out in the next few days. I don't know how long it'll take to get implemented, but I didn't want to ruin the good news.
Well, let me just say that I had not heard that good news, I was going to make the comment that there are two counties on the coast, Tillamook County and Curry County, who spread out their bus system beyond their own county for the common good. And so, but that is wonderful. So okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Well, and certainly we've got connections between the north end of the county, between Lincoln and Tillamook.
Certainly to the east.
Not much to the west, though, is there?
Nobody wants to go there anyway.
That's Terry's department.
That's Terry, yeah.
Waterborne Transportation.
But, for clarification, Lane County is actually driving the project, so we're working with them. And the fact that they're now initiated an RFP is very positive.
They're all ready to do that over a year ago on that committee, so I'm glad to hear it's been revived.
Yeah. All right, the last item on the agenda would be the status of Ocean View Drive and Director Kenyon or Council Belmont or both. Tag team.
So you realize there's a pretty much a good news precedent in
front of you. The lawyer, they don't bring good news.
Good news is in the eye of the beholder. I don't know if we really need to go into depth with the history of this whole process.
It's been, 10, 15 years, so we probably don't have enough days in the week.
It's been a while. I know we've been down here a few times and spoken. I know that some of you have come up several times and we've talked about it. And I think we're to the point now where hopefully everybody's comfortable or at least has some really good ideas of which direction we're going to go. By the way, I'm Roy Kenyon, Public Works Director for Lincoln County. This is my good friend, Wayne. To start with, Larry Lewis sent us kind of a list of questions, and I think basically it more or less came from this group through Larry. And so I thought maybe to start with would address those. And some of them were more or less kind of in my wheelhouse, and some of them were in Wayne's. And so we'll trade off as we go down through these. First question was, what physical improvements will the county do before turning the jurisdiction over to the city of Yahats, if that's what you choose to do? And like I've said before, our plan is to, anything that needs a new lift of asphalt, we're going to put a new lift of asphalt on it, basically from 6th Street, or between 6th and 7th, south to the park. And then the asphalt from the south end of the park back to 101, is actually not in too bad a shape, but I do understand that, you know, you're looking for longevity here, so I would, you know, I thought I would suggest that we do what they call kind of a thin lay, a 1-inch overlay of the existing surface with the new surface. It basically allows for sealing of the road surface, it allows you to stripe it however you want, and it should give you 20 plus years of service there. Also, there have been some questions about drainage issues. You know, like I said before, we would actually take care of those just prior to paving. Any sub-base problems, we'd take care of those prior to paving. There's been talk about the guardrail and that ratty old chain link fence and stuff. And the ratty old chain link fence we could do something with, and we'd have to, you know, talk to you folks to see exactly what you would accept, but I think it would be easily replaced with something else. The guardrail itself, unfortunately, because of standards, once you touch it, basically you're into it for a whole rebuild, and that isn't something that's really on the table. There's some rail that we can maybe replace, that kind of thing, but that, like I said, that's one of those things that we hadn't intended on addressing. What else was on that first question? Drainage erosion and existing pedestrian path. And I think the existing pedestrian path depends on one of the other questions down here, which is travel configuration. And we had talked about with the new asphalt, it possibly creating some one-way sections that would basically allow us room to put in a pedestrian path, something that actually was alongside the travel lane, something that was delineated so it was obvious that it was, you know, a pedestrian, quote, bicycle path. And that's something that we would work with the city of Yahats to do. Timeline on this is if we can get our ducks in a row, I would really prefer to do it this fiscal year, which is prior to July 1. We had a fairly easy winter.
Knock on wood.
No.
Not over yet.
It's mid-March.
So. I remember March 12th, 2012, when it snowed a foot.
Snow's cheap.
Snow, your point's well taken.
Snow is cheap.
I'm giving you a bad time.
Yeah, don't jinx me. Now I lost my train of thought. Anyway, back to where I was. We have money in the budget now to do this.
It's been a good year.
And yeah. If we can keep costs down, keep costs under $50,000, I can do this on a quote rather than a full formal bid. Speeds up the process. We could get the thing painted black, and then at that point in time, could install some temporary centerline markings to give the city opportunity to decide kind of how you want to configure the traffic flow. And at that point in time, even if it was later in the summer, clear as late as August, because I think we're going to stripe this year in August, we need to come down and stripe it suited to, you know, what the city decided. And the thing is, what you have to remember is when you do a one-lane road, it's yellow on one side and white on the other. So as if you're headed south down Ocean View, the line on your right-hand side is going to be white and it's going to be centerline yellow on the left-hand side. Now, if you go the other direction, then it's striped the opposite. So those are just things I'm just throwing out. Well, I'll give you a clean slate. Let's put it that way. Stripe it however you want to. And so I talked about schedule, talked about travel configuration. Travel configuration, I know that there's been some concerns about truck traffic on Ocean View. There's been concerns about, you know, now huge motorhomes and that kind of a thing. And I think this would give the city council an opportunity to look at side streets, look at flow of traffic, and really do what you want as far as limiting larger vehicles by giving them some kind of an alternate route or restricting them altogether. But that would be totally up to you. And we're willing to work with you on that, however you would like assistance. If you want my 2 cents, I'm more than glad to give you at least 2 cents worth. Wayne.
So the other two issues that were questions for us were around, you know, because we proposed legalization and whether we could do something short of the legalization. And we've been discussing the idea of using easements rather than legalization, and that seems to be pretty positive. You know, we've had some positive feedback from the neighbors there. And as long as that's consistent with what the city's, you know, capable and able to do with planning using the easements to get access where we need to go, there's no reason for us to complete the legalization. So we've discussed how we might approach the remaining property owners where we think we need easements. The county will assist in crafting the description so we have the appropriate descriptions, and we'll work with the city attorney in terms of the language that might be on the easement. But that sounds like it might be a viable option to an alternative to doing the actual full legalization. And then the other issue that was that came up was the questions around riprap, whether or not. And that, of course, put me into PTSD. Because I was very involved in 2006 when we did the riprap project down there. And just for very, very short edification, we had a much larger project actually proposed for that. And between Oregon State Parks, which said no way, and Oregon Coastal Conservation Coalition, which actually sued us over the permit, and we went all the way to the Court of Appeals, we consolidated into the smallest project we could do in that particular area. And there, you know, my opinion is you're not going to see any more riprap along. You're just not going to see any more of that. And the county wouldn't do it anymore. And that's the bottom line, is we wouldn't do that. So I did provide a copy of the hearings officer opinion, which was appealed to the Court of Appeals and upheld to Shannon, so she can look at all the interesting things we went through in that particular process. And I think that's it for the questions that we have.
Any last questions, Matt?
I think the second thing you're talking about is more important than my question, so I was wondering if somebody else like Shannon wanted to make a comment on that. But my the only place I see where we have where a planning might get ahead of itself is the state has mandated that we complete the coastal trail, which is for us the 804 trail.
Right.
So I'm presuming that that's going to happen. Well, if we're going to do that from 7th down through the park and out to the highway, then if we're going to do that, then you know that already, then your paving plan would then be less than it would be if you didn't know that. And that's what I guess I'm confused about, where the right decision's made so you don't overpave when we don't want part of that pave because it'll be the 804 trail.
Well, and that's true. And I guess my assumption was that you would want a paved trail. And so if that's indeed not what you want, that makes it even easier for me because I can go in there and grind up a section of asphalt, create some kind of an aggregate-based trail, and pave the remainder.
And I'm not the person to make that kind of decision.
Okay, we're running over time, but go ahead, Greg. So with respect to the mayor, there's not unanimity on the council about this particular question because if you put rock there, I'm going to walk on the street as do most of the people that I see walking.
Yeah.
So I think we need, just so we all understand, we're not all on one page here.
Well, I think clearly we're willing to work with you and work out those details, so I would suggest...
I think we need amongst ourselves you guys to decide what we want. That work.
Well, you know, if there's enough room there, I could pave 4-foot path and leave the other 4-foot aggregate, and then you could take a pick.
All right.
So, with it. Just one quick last note. Since we do have a legalization hearing coming up next week, what we will do is we'll continue that again because we're making a lot of progress, I think, towards getting this resolved. And we'll just go ahead and open the hearing and continue it again while we seek resolution.
All right. Any more questions? All right. If you have the City of Yahats agenda, there is an item that's public comment, but again, normally we do not have public comment during the work session. There is an opportunity to address the Board of Commissioners during our business meeting that will follow immediately, but I guess out of respect for anybody that may be in the audience that feels a strong need to address us now, I would ask you to do so briefly. Otherwise, we'll adjourn and then have our business session where constituent input is always allowed. Come forward, please, and identify yourself for the record.
Hi, my name's Nathan Bernard. Just a quick clarifying question regarding the marijuana tax revenue item. Separate from what we heard so far. I am wanting to know, is there a current marijuana tax in place in the City of Yahats? And if so, what percentage that is? And also how that relates to the state's criteria for what is allowed for a city-imposed marijuana tax?
What we're receiving right now is from the state, and to date we've received a little over $2,700.
Thanks. That's a different question, but I heard you say that earlier. What I saw a document in the city documents that appeared to be council deciding to impose a tax on marijuana, and maybe I...
So my understanding is that was preempted by later action by the state of Oregon.
That's kind of where I was getting at, is wanting to know definitively what the current status of a marijuana tax in the City of Yahats.
We had planned to, and I think we actually came up with a rate several years ago.
The document said 10%.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. My understanding is that was preempted by action taken by state legislature after we voted in that tax.
Okay.
We've been talking about this for a long time, yeah. So...
Maybe I could suggest that the mayor and maybe Shannon or other work together to get an answer to your question. Certainly okay. The county, yeah. We're not in a position to address what the city takes.
Because the county has no involvement in that equation. It's purely city and state as far as we understand it. Is that right?
The county has a 3% tax that was...
Passed by the state.
Passed by the voters.
They
gave us the
option. I see. So there is currently a county tax,
mm-hmm.
countywide, and that is that where the $2,700
is? No, it's not countywide. It only applies to marijuana businesses in the unincorporated areas. I know that
outside of city limits.
Right. I believe Newport, Lincoln City, I'm not sure if Waldport, they all did put on the ballot and pass the maximum a city or a county could have as a local tax was 3%.
That's what the state set as the...
Yeah, as a maximum.
Okay, that's
but it was, again,
well.
At the voters' local option, and all three jurisdictions did pass that.
I
believe if Yahats wanted to consider it, you could still put that out to a vote, but I'm not certain.
So again, I don't know what the city's tax rate is. I would suggest you work with the mayor.
Sure. It sounds like there's work to do to decide that. And so the pool that money, the $2,700 is coming from, is separate entirely, again, from a statewide pool of some sort that we're getting money as a city from. Is that right?
My understanding is it's coming from the state.
From the state.
Oh, the state. It's some sort of state pool that is separate.
Yeah, the state collects a 17% retail tax, and I believe a slice of that does go to cities.
It's a pretty complex one. A portion goes to cities, a portion goes to counties, a portion goes to some dedicated funds for various things.
I see.
And it's the local taxes, which 100 or 110 jurisdictions in Oregon voted on. Actually, every tax that was put out there was passed.
Great. Okay. So I think that gets enough information for now. Thank you.
Okay. With that, we'll adjourn the work session. Thank you, everyone.
Beautiful.